receptivity. Just to talk about it. So come closer, maybe. It's not hot anymore. There's the luxury first floor apartment here. Also. Because I also have a question for you. Once you're it's new. Something feels new. Mm. And it's open receptivity to everything, which I think is a great statement of the day.
I don't know if I am open to everything.
No, it's hard to know. But try to speak a little louder.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Primarily, I don't know if I am open to everything.
Yeah, we're probably not. But there is a certain feeling of being more open to more that has a feeling of everything, even if we are sure that we're not open to everything. Mm-hmm. What's it like?
It's beautiful. Really soft. It's almost addictive.
Addictive?
Yeah.
What does addictive mean?
Addictive flows. With me, I guess. Yeah.
But addictive has the feeling of something that's bad for us, that we have a little bit and there's a certain effect and then we want more and then we have to keep upping the dose.
Something to do with approval.
Yeah. Good. Okay. So let it slowly unfold from there. But exactly. Feeling of being open to everything, and it's soft and wonderful, and the question of addiction and the question of approval or the urge, the discernment between an urge towards getting some kind of recognition, confirmation, approval, something along those lines, attention sometimes. The discernment between that urge and an openness that allows appreciation, that allows contact, that discernment is one key. So, which helps me then to my question for you is, what is the secret of life? That's what we're here for, so.
Is that to answer or is that to keep?
Why not both?
To love.
Okay. So one response is to love as a verb, and with a really beautiful tone of voice with that, like a kind of course and yes. And that's good. Do you want to say more of it?
I know how to put it into words.
Try.
It's about being
Yeah.
To every part of myself and what goes around.
Mm-hmm. And being receptive and the verb to love, how does that work?
Well, I love when I receive.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily from myself. Rather than from others. Although that's important too.
Yeah.
But it feels that the pattern of love, that's interesting, the pattern, the requirement for love sort of nestles within the understanding of my own true nature.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And again, there's that like need for this really fine surgical discernment when we talk about the requirement for love and pattern of love between the compulsive urge towards trying to get confirmation from a place of lack and then something deeper than that, which is the fact that love is needed and is the only thing, and so on. And isn't a pattern. And isn't a requirement in that way, but is also a need. So the discernment, the recognition really is all it is. It's like feeling the splash of cold water on our face. Like the recognition of that simple difference is part of that. Like love as the human medium for something that also is deeper and more subtle and more formless than love. So that's another way of talking about a pattern of love. That's what we have to work with, so to speak. That's our medium. That's how we experience it, etc. And with practice, we can feel what comes before that medium. The more subtle, the less formed, the more in the potential, the kind of bridge between emptiness and form, the beginning of before creativity, kind of. Like when the kind of, let's say, whether we're faced with some kind of tension, conflict, friction, or can't figure out how things can fit together in harmony, which is part of the unplanned but like deliberate way of offering this place, for example. It's not like any other place of doing retreat that I know of. It's not a retreat center. You're not on a regular silent group retreat. You're not on a silent individual retreat. You are in silence, you are in a group. you're not having a manager who's here to take care of all of your needs. You're needing to stay as an adult, but you're also needing to be part of form of a group. And so there's every day there would be, hopefully, ways that you feel a bit of friction with that. And it can be not facing friction, but just loving life or being still. There's a way that life pours or love pours through. And we can enjoy that pouring, and we can also enjoy the sense of the spaciousness or emptiness or stillness as it pours. So if we think of a more like simple creative situation, such as painting or writing or creating dance or music or something, even harder, there's a not blank page. And in meeting that, okay, what to do? There's not, nowadays there's not rules about what it should be. So feeling our way with that. We can feel the difference when we go for some kind of known technique that might have a nice effect that's good enough. But what we really want and what we really love to meet with through the help of the canvas is the space of not knowing what should come, knowing that I don't know and that something will come. It might not come today. It might come through a process of millions of mistakes and frustration and burning the canvas and then using the ash to make something or whatever. It's that unknown. Okay. So there's the act of creativity and the kind of pouring forth of the movement with the color, and that's enjoyable. And also, there's kind of like a... the word bite comes to mind. Enjoying the bite of not knowing. Enjoying the bite of like being in the emptiness that will let something come through. So not just the coming through, but where it comes from, the kind of thing. Which, another way to say it in more Buddhist or Indian spiritual languages is like form and formless. Like enjoying both and enjoying that it's not two things. So what's the secret of your life in the sense of what is most important or helpful for you today?
Not to bother for anything.
Great. There's these, my mom sent me this book of, they're called the Desert Fathers, but they were also Desert Mothers, which I didn't know until my mother told me. That in the Middle East, mostly around Israel, we know about, but people living out like in this kind of spot, and often in community, and usually they did a lot of fasting and things that really outwardly simple, more than we are. But they were living in a community. Also, the Buddhist monks, like everywhere you look, if you look a little bit, you find how people dealt with life and not just the sort of abstract teaching. And so there's so many stories. Let's see if I have any that I think we can have several branches of the not bother. What, how did you put it exactly? Not to bother for anything?
For us?
Yeah. So there's a lot of ones where someone has problems with the community and they go to their teacher and ask, what should I do? And one is like, if you can, you know, the typical, these are Christian practitioners, if you can, like, be kind to the people who are hurting you. And then the person very honestly says, well, and if you can't do that, then what? And he said, just stay away and be quiet. Stay away from the ones that are trying to hurt you and be quiet. If you can't, like, practice sort of taking it as a joke and, you know, in whatever way to play with being in contact with people that you feel are hurting you, then go on your own more and be quiet. And then there's a great story where a couple of the brothers go out from a community and they go into the village, they go to meet someone who's not a monk, who's very happy to see them and very kindly makes them a meal. And but this one brother was fasting and not eating, and so he in his bowl he just took one pea, and then during the whole meal it was just sucking the pea, not just eating it or whatever, but just like sucking. And after, the teacher didn't say anything at the time, which was very funny. If you want to fast always and keep your rule as a rule, then don't go out. And if you go out, then don't display your practice. So I thought it was a really sweet and wholesome interaction of so not to be bothered even by what's good for us. If we're going to go out, then go out. And if you don't want to go out, don't go out. And then there's another one that's kind of another flavor of not to be bothered by anything. The possibility of living without bother is also in that statement. So one father, Abba Elias, said, unless the mind sings with the body, the labor is in vain. That's all. He also said, whoever loves tribulation will have joy and refreshment afterwards. Like being able to get into the difficulty, the challenge, allows the rhythm. So not to be bothered by difficulty and not to be bothered by, even if there's work, which doesn't have to be only physical work here. It doesn't tell what kind of work. But if the mind can sing, we can put it in a net positive statement. When the mind sings with the body, the labor is not in vain. The work is not is fruitful, is not fruitless. Okay, any other secrets?
Addiction, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For example, the word addiction. If we find what is the addiction to? The word addiction is the same statement, that there is one thing that's behind all those other things. And when we try to deal with all those other things and not the addiction, not the addicting quality in us, then there's no way. But if we go straight to that addicting quality, we acknowledge it, we are humble with it, but we're also fierce with it, and experiment to find what's effective. It doesn't take so much, but it's kind of, I think our pride often is in the way. Like, we would like to do it once and be done. So it's again like feeling the force of in the being towards addicting to being bothered by anything and everything. And what is the point of that movement in the mechanism? What's the point? What is that functioning as? What is the function of that? What is it trying to do, so to say? Or what does it do, in fact? So it's a little bit like sometimes people have dreams, and on retreat the dreams usually get more and more intense. Vivid, and sometimes being in nature, there's a little bit more space and it's a little bit more soothed, but sometimes it goes the other way. And there can be a way when there's a very striking dream that afterwards, if you would just tell yourself the story of what happened and take away as if it would be different layers, and you could take away the layer of color, of emotion, and just actually what happened, it can be a really different thing, and it can be a beautiful story. So even if it was a terrifying dream, it might be a kind of small triumph that happens in the story. So similarly, if we can take away some of the layers of the ideas about ourselves that give a charge to how we consider our process. If we let the layer of charge be away, we can maybe feel more accurately the simplicity of what's happening and be just humble and persistent with that. And feeling the goodness of when there's a bit of cleared space, and in all humility, but like a very accurate strike to the root, the how good that feels in the whole being. One more thing about not being bothered, there's a story that some of you would have heard me tell, but I love to tell it, and hopefully you don't mind hearing it a second time if you've heard it. And we have the book both in French and English here, and it's this Jacques Lusseron. Yeah. And my favorite, he has so many different amazing parts to the story that he tells in that book, which is not even his whole life. But when he was little, so he had an accident and lost sight in his eyes. He was 8 years old. And then his father took him to a park, I think it's maybe 2 or 3 weeks after the accident, which he somehow knew was going to happen as well. He didn't know there'd be an accident, but he knew he would not see the countryside that he was in the week before. He knew he would never see it again. Somehow he knew that. Then he had this accident, he lost his eyes. In the park, he so loved this tree, he so wanted to see the tree that he did. And it was through, this is again, a discernment between a kind of compulsive reaching out for confirmation or contact, and then the receptivity of that leads us to find a way in where we find contact. So he was trying so hard to see the tree, like if you try to feel the movement that might be there, like reaching out through the eye sockets that are not working, to try to see that tree that you loved with a childlike kind of ferocity. Kind of like a wild tiger or something, like fullness, intensity, and it not working. But the main thing with Jacques is the not giving up, and I think that's so much related to his parents. For example, he never remembers them once saying that the loss of his sight was bad luck. It was just what happened and what happened. There's also no way forward with trying to see that way. So the energy then finds a way. And so the energy was going out, and then it just went so far in that it found another kind of light that he could see objects without these eyes. So that's the context. But what I want to say about the story that I think is, for me, is the most helpful thing so far that I found in that book. And one of the most helpful things I found anywhere as an inspiration is that then he started to get used to being able to see in that way. And because he could not see in the other way, which we can, unfortunately for us, he could not. He could only see through the inward quality, the inward flow and connection. So he had a fairly normal childhood, and he could play games with other children, for example. And he said that whenever he found himself wanting to be first, he would not be able to see anymore. And so he would not be able to keep playing the game. So there was no question of being first, for example. Or if he would be frustrated because he couldn't get the key into the lock, then the connection was then not accessible in that moment. So it wasn't because it's wrong to be frustrated or wrong to be competitive. It just doesn't work for him. He could no longer see, therefore there was no way of finding the key or running fast, because he could no longer see. And so he says, you know, what need is there for a moral code when it's just about what works? And so for me, that's like a very fiery, inspiring kind of experience that someone had. That why would we give up connection for any reason whatsoever? And then, of course, we do. So then really feeling when that happens and the petty little reasons why, or excuses or whatever. And then just a little bit of honesty mixed in there of where sometimes there's like a falling into the disconnection as if we need a rest from connection, from being that bright and that expansive and powerful and free, which we don't. But we do think there is a kind of believing or thinking. I still don't know what to call that kind of thinking. So if anyone has a word in any language. It's like an assumption somewhere, a blindness, or it's definitely partly habit energy is probably the closest. But it seems to be in the realm of belief, assumption, expectation, something like that. And I think it partly comes from having not been encouraged or allowed to be, that it's not safe to be. And so we didn't, I think as children, we didn't actually believe that, but we mostly agreed, okay. Yeah. That I think as children, I think mostly we didn't believe that this is not possible. But we eventually agreed mm-hmm. that we should be safe rather than free. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we're kind of being offered. And I think it can help to feel where even the worst kind of parenting, many times, was some kind of fear operating on the parent's side, trying to keep the child safe, however twisted the road to get to that point. Like hurting someone in order to make them not do something that would not be approved, therefore is not safe. Like these kind of hypocritical things that we do. But it can help to feel kindness toward that movement in ourselves, kindness to when people are trying to control us, that it might be somewhere deeply like as if trying to prepare us for real life by keeping us safe rather than free. And so what's a key of practicing that quality of being free anyway? Or what's a key of practicing or noticing that safe isn't safe anyway?
Joy is the word that comes up.
Good. Great.
Again, I don't know much about it, but it sort of comes up.
Yeah, good.
I don't understand the question.
Okay. Does anyone understand the question? En français?
En français.
She knows French.
Hey, c'est comment pouvoir rester libre, que rien ne vienne te troubler en fait.
Comment ouais. Rester libre sans que tu veux arrêter d'être libre.
Sans que rien ne vienne vraiment te déranger, cette liberté intérieure de.
And then the other side is like to notice what does déranger, what does make us experience small. So what helps us notice that movement towards safety rather than freedom isn't even safe. And so just, I think, noticing that is that like cold water wake up feeling of I've spent my whole life what helps to notice that the movement towards safety, so contraction, defense, all kinds of reactions, but especially I think I'd like to mention, because it comes a lot the last few days, to allow it to dawn on you where there are like ongoing thoughts, beliefs, assumptions about yourself and about life that have kind of held in place and are not accurate really. So maybe a small short example for me is, but I don't want to limit your exploration by that. That's why I'm hesitating. Because it can be quite a few different kinds of thoughts about ourselves. So it could be, an image came today while I was doing yoga this morning of a really sweet guy that was on one of the early Sarnaths who had a strong aversion to metta, for example. And so we talked about it one time and we agreed he would do a lot of metta. And then he came back the next year and he was like, wow, that was so amazing that you... So it was this kind of, there's a sort of type that we can get into where we would be like anti-touchy-feely heart sort of things. And he, the way we got into it was he had knee pain and he was talking about sitting through the knee pain to what extent. And I was like, but wait a second, let's like rewind. And so we came to maybe do some metta instead of like regretting 20 years from now that you can't walk because you were sitting through pain, because you were meditating in an egoic way. So the idea that I'm meditating, or for him, what came to me this morning, which was a new thing, was seeing him in my mind, remembering him in the mornings in Sarnath, keeping silence. So staying in the compound in case you've been there and not like going out. It's a non-resident, the food wasn't provided. You went out to eat. Or you bought stuff and ate in. So he'd had stuff and ate in. And I just saw like that was actually his avoidance of dealing with people. And it was like that I'm keeping silence thing. Not that, I mean, he's wonderful and he was so courageous to do like a full year of metta and have that revolutionize his life and everything. So it's not, when I do that, I don't mean like to put him down. It's just that how we might think we're doing the right thing and feel proud of it, when it's completely a cover for going for the safety instead of the freedom. Yeah? So I'm being silent, or I'm meditating. I'm doing it properly instead of going out and having chai with people, you know, like, which was so much more challenging for nearly everyone. Okay, so there's the where we think we're doing the right thing, and just feel the feeling of that. That's why I'm doing that. It's like, feel the feeling of propping myself up because I think I'm doing the right thing. Is there something hidden by that? Am I hiding behind them? Or not even I, but is there a hiding from things out there? Okay, so I'm still hesitant to give an example because there's so many important ways, and it's kind of like as if you'd see like the shadow of an airplane or something. Like, it's kind of hard to notice, but it is noticeable. But one from me is I've always experienced myself as a fearful person. And that's always been like in the top layer of my self-description to myself and to others all along. And it just, I think only yesterday I was kind of like, that's really funny because I do experience fears, not to say that I don't and haven't, etc. And to see how the practice has developed where that's less and less and so on. But on the other hand, what I've done in my life, it's the kind of thing that if someone would tell me that, I would be like, oh, I'd never do that. And so just maybe, just a little bit before y'all came, I think, some people from the village came up. And there was this one really sweet boy, maybe about 7 or 8 years old that I hadn't met before. I think they only come on weekends to the village. And he was really curious. You know, all the kids at every chance, they would be like in the house, you know, and they knew they had to take off their shoes because I gave an English class to some of them one time. They were like wanting to see everything. And this was his first time here at all. So he was just, everything was like, he was like, oh, I would never. And he was kind of like a very confident boy. I would never want to live here. He's so scared to live here. And I was like, I would too. I said to him, I would too. If someone told me that, I would be like, oh, wow, I would never do that. So it's just sometimes even things that are true about you aren't true about you. But that what I'm trying to point out is the way that that kind of is held in place as compared to the fuller experience of being alive in your flow. To feel the difference between the unaliveness of what's held in place in an idea, belief, habit, energy. It's not only the thought content, but some kind of energy state that's repressive or something that makes it harder to feel what's really happening, less receptivity. And then a more receptive. And so another aspect to notice about our story about ourselves, so we could feel that the power of that possibility of not being bothered, and then notice when we are bothered, and then we can start to get all tangled up in trying not to be bothered and so on. This is a really important point. I hope I can put it into words. That whole habit of getting tangled up in our difficulties. So it's not to say we don't have difficulties, but our whole habit of getting all tangled up in them is just it's such a curious phenomenon that I think is so important, not only individually, but for the society at this point in time, that people who are interested in being honest and maybe kind, or at least not like sort of aggressive, to stop this movement of getting basically all wrapped up in myself. And so feeling in yourself and being aware in others, where when someone has difficulty, there can be this tendency of getting so self-absorbed in the difficulty. And it can be a genuine difficulty that needs to be addressed, but to at least notice that the lack of receptivity that's going on, the lack of actual contact, and probably what's needed is some, maybe very specific, but some kind of contact flow. And so feeling receptive, you know, letting your skin be alive to the experience when there is more of a feeling of that possibility of not being bothered. And how open, how receptive, how... So not bothered doesn't mean not feeling. But feeling without story is lovely and so different. Or whatever that we feel desperate about, and then that sort of drives us into this tangle. And that's part of what is offered here in Dharmaloka is the chance to be on retreat, to be doing your independent practice, mostly you're doing your independent practice, but you have some support and you're not alone. So, but for good and bad, you're not alone. I mean, for easy and difficult, you're not. It's really a chance to experience being grown up. So on a regular silent retreat, it's so easy to fall into an infantile state that you just wait to be told what to do, whether the meditation instructions or what's going to be for lunch. No, you're cooking lunch. Oh my God, how do I be in those two? So it's actually allowing a whole different kind of thing to form or act. neither infantile nor adult, something like adult, something else, some other kind of responsibility. And so there can be difficulty in noticing that getting pulled in, and then the lack of awareness of how your presence is impacting around you and what's available around you that could help. What kind of communication would be happening, and maybe even is happening, and just a matter of like popping the bubble a little bit. Does that make sense?